Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by The Death Experience, a book by Alan Ross Huguenot that can be found on the web at www.afterlife.pro. Tonight's guest is Thomas Ramey Watson, Dr. Thomas Ramey Watson. And if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Francis. And taking a look across the desk, I see there's a headline that you have from an article that's intriguing. It says, Friends to the Very End and Beyond.
Cool title, huh?
Tell me about that.
Well, it's a group of friends. They've been around for a while, and apparently they had been taking their vacations together and spending their summers together, even though they're from all over the country. And they decided that since they've spent all that time together here in the physical, that they should also plan to spend their time together in the next world. So what they did was they got together. One of the people in the group was a sculptor. She designed this monument for them in Chautauqua, New York, where they're all going to be buried. In fact, two of them have already passed since this project began in 2009. And they just say, since we're such good friends who journeyed together in this life, why don't we plan to go to eternity together on our last trip?
Yeah, isn't that interesting the way people believe, and we see it even in families, you know, that people always have that in their minds that if they're buried next to their loved ones, you know, that they'll be together in eternity. And this group, a group of 50 diverse, you know, friends, you know, thinking along the same lines. But I wonder, does it really matter? I mean, if you're linked, maybe you're linked, and it doesn't really matter.
Well, we know that we're all linked in this big web, and that all we really need to do is to think of the other person and bring them in, and we make that connection. But now here they all are on the other side. And, you know, normally, if they've been friends this long, they'd all be there to greet each other anyway.
Yeah, you would think.
Yeah, you would think.
But maybe it's in the planning, you know, because if they grow closer together in the physical, it carries over, you know. So it's not so much that they're really buried next to each other. It's just that in the planning and the thinking about this and being ingrained.
Well, there's your key word is thinking. If we create our own reality through thought, then this solidifies that thinking because it's constantly with them. They all know that at some point they're all going to cross over. They all know, and they've already decided and they already thought about it, they're all going to be buried in the same place. They're all going to the same place, so they're all going to continue to be with each other in the same
place. It's sort of like you're making an imprint into the cosmic consciousness, you know, I mean, and so I can see the reinforcement. I was reading a book this week written by Michael Tim, who some of our listeners may recognize. He's a very good writer that writes a lot of interesting books about the afterlife, specifically about the great medium.
And he has a great blog to follow.
Great blog. And he wrote a book recently about the life of Leonora Piper, who was a trance medium in the 19th century. And it got me thinking. You know, she would, as many of her, you know, colleagues at the time, go into a trance and then spirit would take over her body and communicate both verbally and through automatic writing. And usually she'd have a control that she was communicating with. In other words, a spirit intermediary that may act as a gatekeeper, so to speak. But incredible, and this was not physical mediumship in the sense that physical manifestations would take place, or ectoplasm or anything like that. It was pure evidence, you know, that came through. And some of the evidence was so startling and amazing. And she was investigated by the top, you know, medical doctors and psychologists and scientists of the time, and they all walked away, you know, convinced that there was spirit communication going on. But when I say evidence, I'm a little bit different than what we used to. I mean, first and last names and specific dates and all sorts of intricate details and really incredible. So it started me thinking that I know, you know, there are many, many good mediums out there today, and I wonder how many have ever tried these mental mediums to go into trance or to try to conduct automatic writing. Maybe that's it's what spirit is once again looking for, you know, more portals to get that kind of information through.
Well, you know, automatic writing, I think, can be still debated, you know, if they were to participate in it. But I think trans mediumship, when you witness that, and you witness it over and over again, you begin to understand that it's something that's really happening.
Well, you know, one thing that Piper was able to do is that she would have one spirit entity communicating with her and her giving the messages verbally, and at the same time, another spirit entity was communicating with her through automatic writing. So she would be talking to one spirit and verbally giving you the sitter the information, at the same time writing volumes from another spirit, you know.
All right, so then that's
amazing, isn't
well,
it?
Well, from our perspective of the physical world, but from a medium's perspective where they allow spirit to take over their body, here, one is taking over her vocal cords, and the other one is taking over her hand motion.
Right.
How many other things can you do at the same time?
Yeah, and what's also interesting is that the coming from spirit, they described seeing a light emanating from the medium, and that's was their cue. And depending on the strength of the light, that affected the strength of the information coming through. And when they would see the light start to wane, they became all confused, and they were not able to gather their thoughts, so to speak, and certainly not communicate them. So I thought that was an interesting insight as well, because we're always talking about light as a, you know, fundamental to the universe and to creation and to connectedness, you know, and through scientific principles and quantum physics and so forth. It all's about light. So and here we have these, you know, these spirit entities. This is in the mid and late 1800s, giving advice. They also talk about at the beginning. When I say they, I'm talking about people in spirit as they're channeling this information. So at the beginning, they were they came up with a system of these table tiltings and these raps as a way of communicating with people to let them know that the spirit world exists. And it was actually a plan that was devised by some scientists, possibly people like Benjamin Franklin and so forth, to allow communication. But later on, they realized that this is just meaningless, you know.
Why is it meaningless? Back then, when they had to devise a system of communication that would show that it was evidential, table tilting, wrapping, all these things were their only means. But now they could turn on and off lights. Now they can leave their voice on our answering machines. Now they can imprint their image on a non-broadcasting television station on our screens. So because of our progress in technology, they're finding new and easier and better ways to communicate.
Yeah, but also at some point, you know, you could also surmise how they would say, well, this is, you know, interesting, but we're not getting any significant messages across. And that's when they became interested in taking over a vessel of a medium who went into trance so they could communicate a lot of stuff.
And the question is, why aren't they doing that now?
Yeah.
Is it because there's no willingness on the medium's part to participate in such
Could be, or spirit gave up.
They're afraid. I mean, people have fears, even if they don't express them, right. Their inner fears.
Well, we can certainly talk more about that in another show, but let's go to a break. We have a wonderful guest tonight, Thomas Ramey Watson.
And Dr. Watson.
Yeah, and he'll be talking about an interesting topic involving psychic phenomena and pets. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Alan Ross Huguenot, author of The Death Experience, What It Is Like When You Die, describes what people will experience as they die. Alan's book is based on his own near-death experience, combined with 40 years of afterlife research. As a graduate engineer, he collated the latest science of quantum field theory and the physics of consciousness while postulating a scientific basis for the location of the afterlife. Learn more at www.afterlife.pro. The Death Experience is available in paperback, Kindle, or Nook editions. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Thomas Ramey Watson, Ph.D. Our sponsor is The Death Experience, a book by Alan Ross Huguenot that can be found on the web at www.afterlife.pro. Bob?
And Dr. Thomas Ramey Watson is a psychotherapist, a writer, a professor. He believes that journeying into the various realms of the physical world, the mind and the soul, is central to enjoying a good life. He's an affiliate faculty member of Regis University's College of Professional Studies in Denver. He taught English for the University of Colorado at Denver. He's done postdoctoral work at Cambridge University, and he was named a research fellow at Yale University. He's the author of many scholarly writings, including a book on Milton, two books of poetry, and a soon-to-be-published novel, which I believe will be entitled Reading the Signs of Paranormal Love Story. He's also the author of a book we're going to be discussing tonight entitled Baltho, The Dog Who Owned the Man. Welcome, Dr. Watson.
I'm glad to be with you.
Okay. And, you know, some might think it's a bit unusual for an academic, you know, with your resume to write a book called Baltho, The Dog Who Owned a Man. So I guess a good place to begin would be by telling our listeners a bit about Baltho and why you wrote the book.
Well, as I said, in several places, I guess, because a number of people ask me, why did you do this or why are you interested in the creative stuff? It's just part of who I am. I've never been able to separate my scholarly work from my creative work, and I've always wanted to work on both, although it's fairly unusual because you have to switch gears when you're moving from scholarly work to the creative. And I wrote the book Baltho, The Dog Who Owned a Man, because I don't think Baltho would have let me do anything else. In fact, I was shown the book cover twice in sort of waking visions, and I knew exactly how it had to look. So I worked with the cover designer back and forth a number of times to get it exactly that way. And in fact, it was kind of worrisome because the photo used in it had not been scanned properly so that the resolution was low, and I thought, oh boy, you know, for months I was trying to figure out how to do that, but I thought, you know, this is what the cover looks like, this is the photo, this is the angle of it. It was actually, he was facing toward the spine, so we had to flip that. That was easy. But I finally found a copy that was able to be used, so it was just sticking to what I'd been shown.
Right. Well, he sort of, you know, Baltho evidently called you to write the book, but he also, that's how you met him, right? And he called you to while he was at an animal rescue. So tell us a little bit.
Okay. I'd had an Afghan that I bought actually in about 74 after I was divorced. And she was a great dog. But I decided this time out, this was the early 90s, that I wanted one of those really responsive dogs that, you know, are really popular, like a golden retriever or a lab, and I was thinking that's what I was going to get. But then I kept thinking, I need to look at Afghans, and I was looking around and wondering why, and I opened the Denver Post one day and saw an ad from the Denver Afghan Rescue, and I thought, oh, I didn't even know we had one. And I closed the paper again and picked it up again, and it wouldn't leave me alone. So I called up the guy who ran the place, Jim, and he said, he talked to me a bit about, you know, what size I was, and I told him, well, I'm pretty tall, about 6'2", and linebacker's build, and told him that I was a psychotherapist, and I was also a professor, writer. He said, I have just the dog for you, and come on out. I thought, oh, good, this is it. So on the way out there, I just kept having this sense that this is the dog calling me. I could just feel it, and it was getting stronger. So I arrived at a place that looked a bit like a prison compound with a big fence around it, number of cement dog pens or dog houses inside, opened the outer gate, and this man came out, greeted me, and we walked out into the kennel and walked past a poor little all-white female Afghan that was shivering and looking terribly cold. And it was, even though it was summer, it was June. And I thought, oh, poor dog. Maybe I better take her. And he said, no. Dog for you is down this way. So just as we started to go down the long alley, off from the side came this huge, hairy beast. running toward me. And he got up to me and leaped up and latched his arms around my neck and started nipping my nose and my earlobes. And I thought, and Jim said something like, "I think you've got yourself a dog." And I'm going, "Well, yeah, I think I couldn't do anything else."
Right.
So that's how it started.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about, and we'll talk more about psychic phenomena, but you definitely had a psychic connection with this dog. And many people, when we talk about animal consciousness, they think of it as on a different level than human consciousness. And they would explain things like the pet just simply, you know, knowing the owner's tendencies, and there wasn't anything psychic going on. But as you probably are aware, there's been research, a lot done by Rupert Sheldrake, that shows otherwise. So when you look back at your relationship that you had with this dog, and there were many times when you heard Balto communicating with you telepathically on a deep level. So when you analyze that, I mean, do you often think, or do you ever think that Balto might have been in human form, you know, once before and chose to be reincarnated as a dog, or perhaps you were both together in another life?
I think we were together in other lives, but I don't think he was a human.
Okay.
I just think we've had a terrifically strong bond, and in fact, he's back with me now in his third incarnation. I'm quite sure we might get to that later, but
right.
Because the verbal communication grew much stronger between the second dog's death and his incarnation now.
Mm. I'm sorry.
No, I don't know. You know, I mean, yeah. Anything's possible. I what I keep being taught in this life is that we shouldn't try to come out with hard and fast formulas about anything.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. I mean, had you experienced, or have you experienced other so-called paranormal phenomena, you know, during your life? I mean, do you consider yourself to be intuitive in any way?
Yes, I've had paranormal experiences throughout my life. In fact, I don't even consider them so unusual because they're just part of my life.
Yeah.
Not that they happen all the time or every day, but, you know, every now and then, and they turn out always to be right.
I know that Balto, you've called Balto, and other people have called him a therapy dog, because, you know, you were counseling your clients, and there were times when Balto would join in, or just about always he would join in, you know, during
right.
your therapy sessions. And what's uncanny is that he seemed to, from your descriptions, to actually know when something you said that needed to be reinforced, or sometimes he would actually take the lead, you know, in approaching one of the patients. So, I mean, how did you come to realize this, and what did you think of it the first time it happened?
Well, again, I'm not sure I'm easily surprised, to tell you the truth. Yeah. I've had so many unusual experiences in my life that I just kind of, he was a show-off from the beginning. He always loved to pose, strike a pose, and be the center of attention. And that became very clear from the beginning because, as you know in the book, he liked to. I usually saw clients when I saw them at home, and at that time I was seeing them at home quite a bit. I had an office in Cherry Creek, too. But I had two wingback rocking chairs upholstered in front of my big window in my townhouse, and he would position himself, but the client would be in the chair on the left and I would be on the one on the right. He would position himself right between us and insist that we had to look at him instead of each other for the beginning of every session. He would just sit there, and then he'd raise his head, and we'd try to move beyond him or look out a little bit, and then he'd be right there in our line of vision so that we couldn't miss him. That's kind of the way it started, and you'll see in the very early part of the book where one of the clients was well-dressed in a really nice suit, tie, shoes. All of a sudden, Balto was up in his lap,
yeah.
fawning over him and petting
right.
his face. And I was at that time a little bit taken aback and thought, oh, dog, you know, this guy's just checking me out, and here you are up in his lap. And it turned out that he liked it. He felt he needed to warm up, and that's what his wife told him. And so he liked me, and he liked the dog, and became my client. I call him Darren in the book.
Yeah, I do remember reading that. I mean, did you find, since you are, you know, intuitive, and you do have a psychotherapy practice, I mean, does your intuition ever come into play when you're counseling your patients, or?
Oh, yes, and I think that's the thing with this dog, was that we had this intuitive connection with each other, and that would play off of each other.
Mm.
And, in fact, if you remember in the book, the Heart Talk Cafe that I started,
yeah,
with an intuitive and spiritual reader as well as an acupuncturist, we, again, played off of each other, because I found that I could just sort of look at a person and sort of move my consciousness to the right a little bit and intuit where in the chakras they were having a lot of energy or some sort of tie-up or something, and then sort of hone in on that as far as what was going on with them. And I think one of the guys in there was having a lot of energy in the sort of the second chakra, the genital, the creative chakra. And I kept thinking, you know, there's something about the creativity there that's needing to be expressed. And my friend, I think I called her Marilyn there, her real name Shirley. She said that she didn't mind if I used a real name, so I used it.
Okay.
She picked up on that and said, yeah, he needs to write. He really wants to write. And I can't remember if the acupuncturist, I don't know that he was looking at pulses and tongue, but I don't think he really got involved in that one. And sort of we went on, and it turned out that his dad wanted him to be, I think, some professional lawyer or something, and which was fine, but he really wanted to be a writer. And I was trying to consider, well, you know, you need some kind of income. Being a writer is really tough. I know too well.
Right.
So we, you know, kind of explored the idea of his being more creative, working on that creativity, expressing it. And I found that in other ways that that helped. And I always find that when I'm among creative people and among people that are intuitive, my intuition is better.
And I do know from the book that you are quite, you know, intuitive. One of the interesting things, especially in view of your profession, you had an experience in your neighborhood where you saw one of your neighbors, you went over to say hello, and
yeah,
you were later told by family members that the person that you saw had passed away.
Right.
And you know, I know, do you think that perhaps you had a very, you know, nice, comforting conversation with his loved ones, and do you think that maybe you were guided to go there by that deceased person so that you could comfort his family?
Oh, yes. I think that happens a lot. I think there's so much more that happens behind the scenes, in other words, in the spiritual realm, if we're just open to it, than we ever realize. And I think it happens with animal connections who are guiding us to what we need to do or who we need to connect with, and people too. Mr. Contini, as I called him in the book, was just in love with his yard. He was always out there every morning, and I'd stop and talk to him. And the years that I'd lived over there and in old North Denver, he was working on his roses, his garden. He loved his vegetable garden. He kept it absolutely neatly. And I noticed that I'd moved away for a while and came back and adopted Balto. And I was walking past one day, and I kept seeing him out there, this little old Italian man. And I couldn't figure out why he didn't say anything to me. He didn't even look at me. He just kept walking around the yard looking at his roses and his statues, because he always bought new statuary every spring, cement statues, and then painted them up in the old classical manner, you know. He gave them flesh tones and put beauty marks on their cheeks and things, you know, funny stuff. And
yeah,
his English wasn't great, but we always had a little chat. And I walked past several times and thought, well, I don't know why he doesn't talk to me. He doesn't even look at me. So one day I had Balto out there and stopped to chat with his grown daughter who'd moved back in with their aged mother and said, how's your dad? And told them a little bit about it and couldn't figure out why he hadn't talked to me. And they said, oh, he died over a year ago, I think it was. I went, does he have a brother? Not a relative that looks like him?
Right.
No. And we went from there. And, of course, they were old-fashioned devout Catholics and were kind of scared, you know. And I said, well, I there's no reason to be scared. I think that, you know, we say in the Creed we believe in the communion of saints, of the living and the dead. And I think it means exactly that. You know, our loved ones are always sort of checking on us and looking at us and hoping we're doing well and wanting us to do well and to get on with life. And they were really caught in the past and feeling guilty that they hadn't done enough and that they weren't keeping the yard up well enough and everything. And we talked more, and I think it helped them find some release. At first, I was thinking they'd make the sign of the cross and shoo me out of there.
Yeah.
That happened too, but yeah. I just said, because I knew.
Yeah. Well, I know that I also recall a passage from your book where you were talking about a time where you were dreaming that you were talking on the phone, and then you woke up and you realized that the phone had not rung, and then a few moments later the phone did ring and it was the same person you were talking to in the dream phone conversation.
Right.
So do you? I guess you don't struggle with integrating these things into your life because they always happen to you, right?
They do, but sometimes I misinterpret them, as I did the dream about Balto's death, because I thought he was going to recover at the end, and it turned out he died, but then he came back to me in the second incarnation, Hattie, a few years later. But, yes, that was about my supervisor, who was just totally out of control, an ethics specialist, supposedly, but just wasn't at all in touch with his dark side, and that owned him, I'm afraid, the shadow owned him. So he'd been very upset, made threats against me, and I left his group, and it just went on, and he was investigated by the state and came up with something like plea bargain 5 counts or something, and there was even more I didn't reveal, but his wife came down with cancer. She'd sort of been his great helper, and I dreamed that he called me up, and the phone had rung, and I woke up, or I thought I'd woken up, and he said, Tommy, what have you done to me? And then I realized that I hadn't woken up, the phone hadn't rung, and then it did ring, and the same thing happened in real life right afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the most incredible, I know these things, you know, kept happening to you, and I know you integrated them into your life as normal occurrences. As you mentioned before, sometimes the interpretation is differently, but that's always the way it is, isn't it? You know, when it comes to the dreams and visions and communication with spirit, it's always subject to the physical interpretations, you know. So
And, you know, we interpret according to our own paradigms. You know, that's the important thing to realize, too, that, you know, I come from a Christian background. So I, you know, and my training as Episcopal chaplain for Auraria, I interpret things from a Christian manner, Christian stance. It's my language. It's my vocabulary. So that tends to be the way I interpret, although I'm certainly not dogmatic or doctrinaire about it, because I think their truth is truth, and you find it in throughout the world, and I think we'll find it throughout the universe, too, something that C.S. Lewis points out. So we have to remember that we see things in our own paradigm on top of our own interpretation, and that interpretation is based, I think, on our education, our family background, our life experiences, and somebody else may have some insight in that. But I don't think we dare interpret for somebody else and say, this is what it means, because that's dangerous.
Right. And we are talking with Dr. Thomas Ramey Watson. Dr. Watson's website is his name. It's Thomas Ramey, R-A-M-E-Y, Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N, .com. You can find out a lot more about his other works, about this book, and also has an interesting blog that you can follow. So we're going to take a break. We come back. We're going to come back with much more. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Alan Ross Huguenot, author of The Death Experience, What It Is Like When You Die, describes what people will experience as they die. Alan's book is based on his own near-death experience, combined with 40 years of afterlife research. As a graduate engineer, he collated the latest science of quantum field theory and the physics of consciousness while postulating a scientific basis for the location of the afterlife. Learn more at www.afterlife.pro. The Death Experience is available in paperback, Kindle, or Nook editions.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, fromheaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Thomas Ramey Watson. This show is sponsored by The Death Experience, a book by Alan Ross Huguenot. that can be found on the web at www.afterlife.pro. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. There are three ways you can show us that you like Signs of Life Radio. The first one is go to the Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. The second, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you will need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time that card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for, and there are more than 1,000 online stores like Bloomingdale's, Drugstore.com, Petco, Snapfish, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Night of Mediums is set for April 12, 2013 at the Melville Marriott, with lots of certified mediums coming from across the country to take part in this annual fundraiser. Sales have now opened up to the general public, and we have two tables left before the new ads hit the streets. So if you are thinking about attending, it might be time to make your decision and make your reservations. As always, our caution is to be certain, as we must maintain a no-refund policy due to the time and resource constraints of the foundation. Our Grief Transformation Weekend is set for July 26th through 28th. At the Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. The first 50 reservations will fill this intimate retreat escape with like-minded people seeking to maintain their relationships with those who have crossed to the other side. Watch for announcements in your email boxes, which will tell you all about this exciting weekend with Dr. Garrett Jackson, Paul Alexander, Dr. Betty Kovach, Doreen Malloy, Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Laura Lynn Jackson, and our Healing Reiki team of volunteers. If you would like to be put on the first notification list, please send us an email at events@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And back to you, Bob.
And we're back with our guest, Dr. Thomas Ramey Watson. His website is thomasramywatson.com. And getting back to Balthow, you had a very significant moment. I mean, after Balthow had passed away, I know you heard a thump on your bed, and you turned and you saw Balthow's presence beside you. So, evidently, spirit consciousness can manifest in the physical, regardless of whether the spirit was in physical form or in an animal or human, right? I mean, that spirit doesn't matter. It appears that we have one consciousness that can manifest and visit us. Do you agree with that?
I agree.
Yeah. Were you
he came
shocked?
Back and visited. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just asking if you were shocked or taken aback when you saw Balthow standing there.
No, I was woken up in the wee hours of the morning, and in fact, for about 10 days, he jumped up on the bed to greet me and brought other dogs, some of whom I knew, with him. I could feel their presence on the bed. It wasn't as much as, as heavy as if they'd been physically manifest, but they were clearly there.
Yeah.
One he brought back quite a few times was this little toy poodle, coal-colored, and he let the poodle come up first after that first time. And the toy poodle would come up and lie down right beside my, in the crook of my neck, and Balto would lie below that, and then sometimes the other dogs would lie down at my feet, maybe two or three, so I had a bed full. And in fact, when Balto came back the second time and I found him, he was a her this time named Hattie. I'd had him for, or had her, I should say, for maybe a year, and the other dog I had, Flopsy, died of kidney failure, and Hattie was grieving, and all of a sudden this little toy-colored poodle, or this coal-colored toy poodle, appeared in the neighborhood, and my neighbor said that he had rescued the dog from the street, and that he wanted me to take him. I went, okay, because he followed us home, and I thought, well, maybe it would help Hattie feel better. It occurred to me maybe about a year later that, oh, wait a minute, surely, that is my psychic friend in the book, had told me that Balto had shown these dogs how to come back and manifest again. And I thought, now, wait a minute, I wonder if this is that dog, because Hattie definitely defers to him, and he wants to run the show, even though he's a little toy poodle, and she's 10 times his size. So, and they became closer through the last lives. She saved him at least 5 times from coyotes that grabbed him. Well, twice they grabbed him, and then the other times they tried to grab him. So he became beholden to her. Both of them died within, oh, a few months apart, a couple of years ago now, I think. And in fact, I had communication with Hattie several times about exactly where to look for her this time that she was coming back, when, what that she would look, that she would be an unexpected color, which she turned out to be. All the other Afghans were black and tan, black and red. She happens to be and she told me she wanted to be called Melchior this time. I thought, oh, Melchior, another of the three wise men. So I figured that he's going to manifest that psychotherapy dog aspect. I found him. His name is Melchior, and he's totally unexpected color. And you can look on my website, or on my website as well as my Facebook page. I welcome people to join me under the page called Balto the Doggo and the Man, and see his pictures and read about how he's growing and manifesting his psychotherapy aspects.
We can follow along. That's absolutely. We have a caller that would like to speak with you. You mind taking a call? Okay, who do we have on the
line? We have Diane from Texas on line 3.
Diane?
Hi,
hello.
Diane?
Hi, how is everyone?
This wouldn't be Diane Archangel, would it? I don't know too many Dianes from...
It is.
Hi, Diane. She's one of the people that wrote an endorsement on the book.
You may, and you're so welcome. You may have answered this while I was dialing, but I didn't hear it. Tom, have you ever felt that you've had the more? Since dogs have a shorter lifespan than humans, have you ever felt that you've had more than one incarnation with Balto?
Yes, I'm quite sure of it. In fact, I'm on his third incarnation with me now, Melchior. And I could elaborate just a little bit on how he came about, because Hattie was kind of a difficult problem. I wasn't well connected in the Afghan community, and by the time I found her, because I kept feeling that same energy tugging on me that I felt with Balto, she had been bought as a show dog by these people, then proceeded to abuse her badly. And so by the time I found her, her spirit had kind of been broken. I knew she was the same dog, though. But after she died, as I said, she started communicating that fall. She died. I had to have her put down in August. She died of cancer. And I heard her tell me distinctly, and I heard her voice say, I'm coming back soon. I'm coming back this fall. And I figured that with the help of some of the Afghan community that we had to figure out where she ought to come back, and I figured she'd come from the same line Hattie'd come from, and from a breeder in Cheyenne. And then I heard her tell, and I guess, well, I then found out that this breeder was breeding that fall, but then Hattie told me, well, it's off. So I got hold of the breeder, and she said it didn't come through because it didn't take. So then I thought, okay, next year. So this last fall, I heard Hattie saying to me, and it was still her feminine voice this time, saying, while she was still disincarnate, you know, between lives, that she was coming back, and it was for sure this fall. That, in fact, she told me, I'm cooking. And I told one of my friends, and she said, well, I don't think Deb is planning, this is the breeder, to breed until spring. And I said, Hattie tells me she's cooking. So I got hold of Deb Ann, and Deb said, yeah, she was expecting a small litter because she used artificial insemination. So I asked her when she was going to be born, and she said probably about the middle of November. On Sunday, November the 11th, I was out walking, as I'm usually sort of meditating, and that's where I often get a lot of these things. I heard Hattie say to me, I'm born. I thought, okay, good. And I said, well, how am I going to know you? And she said, I'm going to be an unexpected color, and I want to be called Melchior this time. She made that very clear, I want to be called Melchior this time. So I got hold of Deb Ann and said, I feel kind of silly because I'm sticking my neck out with all these specifics, and told her what I knew or what I've been told, and she said, yes, they were born yesterday on Saturday the 10th. And she said, yes, the others are all black and tan, black and red, I think. But he was totally unexpected. I had no idea he was going to be a faded domino, which is kind of I think he's classed as a red domino, kind of reddish cream. Domino means they have a Mickey Mouse mask. And he's a darling dog. He's really mature for his age. He's 17 weeks now, and already I can see the therapy dog manifesting in him because he's got wisdom beyond his age. He loves to pose again. Loves to be the center of attention. I've had him registered as a service dog in training. We've been in several psychology situations, offices, and he's gone over to help the people grieving. And in fact, he even jumped up in some boy's lap the other day after seeing him a few times, going over to see him, and I thought, oh, here we go again, Darren Redux.
Diane, it sounds like you could have used some of Thomas's therapy dogs in your hospice work days, huh?
I sure could have. It would have been wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for answering that. I had wondered about that.
Yes, thank you, Diane. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you, too. Bye, Bob. Bye, Fran.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
It seems like... Yeah, as you describe these things, that you sure get the impression that you had very little choice. These things are unfolding despite your wishes. It's sort of like it was meant to be.
Yes. I think good and bad, because I've had some very bad experiences where I've tried to change what seemed to be the future, you know, such as Balto's death, and it just happened. But I don't grieve nearly as much now because I know that the spirit lives on. Mm. And if there's a strong connection, I'm just sure we stay together and we continue. The physical form changes, but the essence of the being is still there.
And I know that you mentioned, I know we're coming to a close, but I thought it was very insightful when you said that Balfour taught you to take up your sword against the forces of darkness.
Indeed, I was brought up to just sort of accept everything and try to move on and go around it or not pay too much attention, not to fight back. And
right.
I think he taught me very early in that encounter with the neighborhood dog that... When evil confronts you, you've just got to confront it back. And I think that's why we have such a mess in this country, because we've let it go on, and it's just infected all of our institutions.
Mm. Well,
we've got a big fight now.
I think so. We have been talking with Dr. Thomas Ramey Watson. The website is thomasrameywatson.com. There is a link on the Forever Family Foundation website, an Amazon link if you wish to purchase this book. I would encourage you to pick it up. I describe it as a book about connections, love, spirituality and mystery all combined in one. So, Dr. Watson, it's been a pleasure.
Hey, Bob, can I put in a quick plug?
Sure.
Do I have time for a quick plug? If people buy the book from my website directly, right now I'm running a special. If they buy it there, I will send them a signed copy and inscribed for the retail price.
Okay.
If they would like to have the signed one.
Yeah,
and Amazon's a great source, too. So, it's out in Kindle as well.
Okay. Well, thank you,
and
we hope to speak to you again soon. Good night.
That'd be great. Thanks very much. Perfect. I enjoyed it.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Francis Mastracco, Tim Donahue, Deb Martin, Tina Jocelyn, Barbara Russell, Nancy Shield, Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Varon, Eileen Lapata, Rita Springer, David Haith, Barbara Petillo, Glenna Irwin, Julie B., Stanley Mullen, Laura Prisco, Tracy Lee Nash, Marian Pierzga, Tanya Cash, Melissa Gould, Linda, Laura Lynn Jackson, and Andy O'Brien. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.